Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I was actually recording a course when I had just found out a really great friend was diagnosed with a pretty progressive breast cancer. And so walking back into recording that course, you know, I was trying to keep it cool and do my thing. But in between the takes, the producer actually just kind of joked around and said, quick, say something for your kids, as if they're watching this, right? And so my mind just jumped to, like, what if this was happening to me?
Welcome to A Certain Age, a show for women who are unafraid to age out loud. Beauties, a quick question for you. Do you believe in serendipity? The good luck of finding things unintentionally? I'm asking because today's wonderful guest is joining me due to a stroke of serendipity. I was scrolling through CNBCnews.com, something I never, ever do, when a headline caught my eye. It read, a 42-year-old spent $1,000 to launch her Amazon side hustle. Now it brings in $33,000 a week. Of course, I clicked on this. I was curious. And in a few moments, I knew immediately that the woman featured in this article was somebody I wanted to have on the show. And here's why. Serendipity, chance, may have introduced me to Dr. Jenny Wu, her company Mind, Brain, Emotion, and her work in emotional intelligence training. But what hooked me was the intentional, deliberate, considered approach she brings to building emotional resilience and equipping people of all ages with strategies to help you be happier, calmer, and stronger in life. Dr. Jenny Wu is a Harvard-trained educator, emotional intelligence researcher, a PhD, MBA, entrepreneur, and mom of three. She started her career as a human capital consultant and executive coach. Now she is the founder of Mind, Brain, Emotion, which offers 11 different EQ-focused card games to give people of all ages relationship skills, critical thinking, coping skills, and help them build the deep, meaningful relationships that add up to a happy, satisfying life. If you want a fresh toolbox for building relationships, resilience, managing negative emotions, if you love hearing scrappy entrepreneurial stories, if you get inspiration from women who continuously reinvent their lives and professional work, stick around. This show is for you. Welcome, Jenny.
Thanks for having me, Katie. What an intro. And you gotta love the clickbait title. So I'm so glad that we are here talking today.
I know. It definitely was clickbait. It got me to click. But when I did my deep dive, I was like, this is such a fascinating story. It's such a fascinating product. It's such a fascinating offering. And I really wanted to explore it with you. So I'm really excited. I gave a little taste in the intro to our listeners, but I would love for you to share how you came to build a business in emotional intelligence card games.
Sure. So something that was not in that CNBC article was actually the fact that I am an immigrant and I came over to the United States when I was about 10 years old. And interestingly enough, prior to that, I had spent about 5 years growing up without ever seeing my parents. So you can start to see the connections of just learning about emotions and coping, right, from a personal standpoint as a child and being reunited in the United States with my parents after a long time and trying to acclimate to culture, language, right, not knowing the alphabet. So that really kicked off in terms of knowing what's important in life and what you need to succeed.
Jenny, can I hop in one quickly and ask you, where did you grow up?
Yeah. So was born in China, came over to the United States to Houston, Texas.
Okay. So that's a very, very big transition. That is a culture shock transition.
Incredible culture shock. Yes. So then after high school, I did move over to Southern California. And interestingly, you know, it's ironic growing up in Asia, everybody looked like me, and then going into Texas, being the only Chinese person in my ESL class, the language learning class, and then going to Southern California where there were people who looked like me again. So I started my career, as you mentioned, Katie, in the business world. And very much the common theme is around developing people, except I started with adults as a human capital consultant. And again, that's where I realized, you know, these soft skills that they really don't teach you at school are, again, so incredibly important once you get into the career field. And as a manager, it not only impacts how you might get that next promotion or not, as well as the people around you. You know, when we talk about toxic workplace or even home place and that households, right? In that sense, that is so incredibly important. And so, yeah, so from adult, developing adult in the workplace, and eventually I had kids of my own, and that was so eye-opening.
That's another culture shock.
Yeah. And it never ends.
Right. It's like, you know, woo. You reinvent your life on a dime. It's really challenging.
It really is. It's like all the stuff that you knew about yourself and you're seeing it unfolding and really amplifying into this emotional roller coaster, right? That shock just never goes away. And that's when I looked within myself and realized I thought I knew all about how to manage my emotions, how to be a good person, wife, leader, parent in this sense. But during distressful like moments, who am I? Who is this monster? Right? I'm looking, reflected in the mirror.
Who is shouting at her children or her husband? I know it's super, super challenging. It's a roller coaster of emotions.
Yeah. And that coupled with I had an older one and then shortly after a set of twins by surprise, and they were preemie twins. My daughter weighed less than 3 pounds. And so managing health crisis and this whole uncertainty was really, really hard as a mother. And they were all age of three of them under three, all in diapers. And so talking about reinvention, this is more of by necessity in some sense, where I took steps back and really wanted to be there for them. And that really kickstarted my interest in developing children, right? The little adults. And I started more of a new career as a school director at a network of Montessori schools. And that was the same Montessori school that my three kids ended up attending. And Katie, you know, again, being the practical person I am, I started it partially because I want it free tuition.
I love it. Well, believe me, I grew up in New York City. Free tuition is like, you know, that's like a extra cash in your pocket for sure.
Exactly. And yeah, so that and also really, well, we say get the juice, right? On like, or the dirt or the tea, however you might call it, of what exactly does it mean to be a good mother, right? Because we hear about this selfless mom notion and, you know, the Pinterest types of mom. And I wanted to know, is this normal? Is this what everybody does? So that was also my intention. And again, that's also where I realized in working with children, teachers, and parents that we all need these types of human skills, soft skills, emotional skills, whatever you might call it. So yeah, so the connection of working across lifespans really encouraged me to look into ways into bridging this gap that I see that's across so many different generations and settings. And that is where later on, when I was laid off by my job because of budget cuts, that I then wanted to reinvent. And so went to the Harvard Graduate School of Education at the tender age of 35.
I love it. Right? We love it. Yeah. We're a continual work in progress. We're always learning. And so that you were at the Harvard Education School. I know you spent time in the Harvard Innovation Lab, right? Is that when you first developed the deck, your emotional intelligence card games? What, you know, how did you land on your, what is your, I think your hero product, which was the first deck, 52 Essential Conversations?
Yeah. There is a few things that were triangulating. One is, so I'm the first person in my family to graduate a four-year college. And so being, you know, you mentioned the word scrappy,
yes,
right? Being scrappy, I wanted to not just be there at this amazing once-in-a-lifetime institution experience for myself, but really help other scrappy folks like me and to really disseminate knowledge, wisdom, research, and resources and social capital in a way that is digestible, easily usable, and accessible and culturally responsive for everyone. So that part, so I knew walking into Harvard that I wasn't just here for some paper, right, of matriculation. I wanted to do something to really level set the playing field. And the second one, which is actually quite relevant to sort of our whole, your whole topic, is as we confront with aging, right, we are dealing with health issues. And so I had a couple of friends who are really dealing with cancer diagnosis. And in fact, I was actually recording a course when I had just found out a really great friend was diagnosed with a pretty progressive breast cancer. And so walking back into recording that course, you know, I was trying to keep it cool and do my thing. But in between the takes, the producer actually just kind of joked around and said, quick, say something for your kids as if they're watching this, right? And so my mind just jumped to like, what if this was happening to me? This, the likelihood as you get older, things happen.
Yes.
And so I began to think, how can I document these experiences, these wisdom and these, you know, things that we want our kids to know so that if anything happens to us, we'll rest in peace, knowing that they're sort of set in life. They'll make responsible decisions. They know who they are and we can rest in peace. So at that moment, this sort of like all flashed across my mind, like, what do I say? But I was like, I didn't know what to say. I had no words. I didn't know where to begin. And so that experience also kind of started to marinate itself and wanting me to think about, okay, what are the skills that are most important? What do I want to leave with my kids, knowing that they're good people for themselves and for the society to each other, right? And what are these amazing research that I'm already seeing in terms of how you can succeed and really flourish in life and across all contexts? And so there was also a research around conversations that's out of Harvard and MIT that year when I was at Harvard. And it was about this magical serve and return conversation, not just lecturing or really reading to your child, but rather back and forth. That reciprocated, just having an authentic dialogue, it literally changes your child's brain. And this mirroring process really is good for the dyad, the parent and the child and things around that. So I would say those three things really helped me understand this hero product.
I love this backstory. And I love the fact that you were in this moment of really like tumult and upset in your own life. And you thought to yourself, if this were me, have I equipped my children to manage this moment? Am I leaving them with the skills, resources, and tools that they need to navigate life? Jenny, we're heading into a quick break, but when we come back, I want to hear how this aha moment as an entrepreneur manifested itself in your first physical product. We'll be back in just a minute.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
The NBA playoffs are back. And on FanDuel, new customers can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Back in the day, news like this, your crew would have been writing each other letters.
Dearest Benjamin, wonderful news from the East. The spread has been covered.
Or maybe you'd use your phone to actually call someone.
Man, you see that dunk? Man, I saw that dunk.
But these days, it's all about the group chat.
I love that high-fiving kitten emoji.
No matter how you tell them, let your crew know that all new FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Ooh, Morse code. Classic. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus vets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Jenny, we're back from the break. When we went into it, we were talking about your aha moment and how you realized that you needed to create something that would allow you and other parents and other people, right, to have the kind of conversations, to gain the kinds of skills, strategies, coping mechanisms that they need to manage whatever life throws at them, right? It could be a diagnosis, a job loss, a move, or just the desire to connect and build a sort of robust network of meaningful relationships in our life. So when you had this aha moment, what came next? How did you create that first deck of 52 essential conversations?
Yeah, Katie. So having this aha moment really moved the needle, but I was still stuck in some sense because I didn't know what format, sort of what this vehicle of knowledge transmission was going to look like. Obviously, I thought about a book, a research paper, you know, sort of those things. But it just felt like as a busy parent myself or busy adult in general, how can we, you know, it's really hard to be able to digest that information and then to readily apply it into our own context. And so I wanted something that was easier and in some sense, playful. And so we had moved from Southern California to Boston, and we wanted to take advantage, really, of the surrounding states. It became so much closer. And so every weekend, we pretty much drove in our car to New Hampshire, as my, let's see, first great son at the time called it New Hampshire.
I love that rebrand.
Yeah,
so
exactly,
cute.
Right? Yeah. And so we would spend all these time in the car, and I would think about how can I entertain them? And we would have great conversations in the car, but sometimes I'm like, I want to talk about it, but I don't know what. And so that kind of started sprinkling a seed of something that is portable, playful, and fun. And we used to play cards all the time, Go Fish, Crazy Eight. And so that kind of got into my brain. And really what had sealed it was in a class at Harvard, actually, we happened to be playing with a set of cards, almost like an icebreaker. And on this particular set of cards, there were like one question sentence on each card. And at the time, I remember remarking, you know, this is like speed dating, speed networking. This is pretty fun, you know, and spontaneous. And that was really when I realized, hey, why not disseminate all these knowledge, human skills, and wisdoms in a stack of cards. But for me, I wanted to make it just a little bit more sort of deep dive and intentional, as you had mentioned. And so I utilized the suits on each of, you know, for the playing cards, like the hearts and diamonds. Each of the suits really stand for a particular focus area related to a set of skills. So for emotional intelligence, for example, hearts would be self-awareness. And I had drawn out these really cute sort of characterized figure that's kind of like a heart that is happy and putting little character arms and hands around the heart, you know?
So sweet.
Yeah. And so also, since it had these numbers on the cards, right? Ace, two, three, four to king, I realized these could be repurposed and remixed as really the level of difficulty.
Ooh, and I just, smart.
Yeah. And I decided to make ace actually as the easier one on the building blocks of difficulty level because kids and really anybody want to feel powerful. And I think we should all have the sense of self-control and agency. So I start with ace and then two, three, four, and it really works up to more and more complex topics. And so that really, really came the 52 essential conversations. And I started to test that out in the field from schools to friends with kids, their homes, videotaping, recording them to a research poster to really understand how I can make this accessible and adaptive for everyone to use.
And one of the things I love when you use the word adaptive, I mean, I think it's important for listeners to know that the 52 essential conversations began, you know, initially it was rooted in your work with trying to reach children and being a parent, but you have 11 decks and they span ages. I mean, these decks are to be used by anyone at any age. In a few minutes, we're going to dive into some of the decks. You and I have pulled some of the cards and I'm going to get to ask you, and maybe you'll ask me some of the prompts in them so listeners can have the experience of knowing what it's like to interact with one of your decks. But before we do that, I do want to ask you, I know that you launched 52 Essential Conversations, your hero product that we talked about, designed to help parents with the sort of struggle that many, many parents have, particularly of teen boys, which is what I have. When you ask your kids questions about their lives, their days, their weekends, sometimes you get like a monosyllabic answer, you get a shrug, you get, oh, it was okay, it was good. It's hard to get information. So your decks help pull information out, but the reverse is true as well, right? Because parents get to reveal information to their children that they might not otherwise have. And I love this intergenerational component to this. I know, for example, when I think about myself, I'm 54. My mom knows a lot about like my dating life in college and you know, in my young adulthood, but the reverse is not true. I don't know a lot about her experience, for example, with that. And I know even less about my grandparents. And so these are wonderful prompts that people can use to kind of build this intergenerational conversation. So you mentioned, this is a very long intro to a question, but I'm getting there, Jenny. I promise there is a question at the end of this. You shared at the beginning of the conversation that you're an immigrant, you were born in China, and that you moved here, you know, after your parents kind of paved the way by spending time here, then brought you to join them. You know, have you used these decks with your own parents? And if so, have you learned anything that helps you know them better?
Yeah. I think the certain generation and sort of cultural context that my parents grew up, it's really, really hard for them to reveal insecurities, vulnerabilities, and certain things. And I think the cards, like you said, Katie, right, definitely is not threatening and it disarms whether you're working with a teen or really your parents. And so for me, I think it's level setting your expectations. And the cards are 52. They could literally, they're not meant to be used all at once. It's really, it could be like a card a week or a few cards in a car. And part of it, sort of how to play the cards, as you alluded to, Katie, is through role modeling, through opening up, but also offering the option of skipping. And it's a reciprocated process. It's not just we interrogating our parents or our kids. And so I think for me, what makes it helpful is I also reveal something to get them to open up as well.
Right? No, that's really smart. That's a super smart strategy. Not strategy makes it sound calculated, but it's a very generous way of being in an interaction, right? To kind of reveal yourself and to make yourself open and vulnerable and open-hearted, because that often produces the same, that reverb, that mirroring from the person that you're in dialogue with.
Exactly, the mirroring. Yeah. And what surprises me sometimes is that you could very much go off a tangent and something that entirely unexpected, whether it's their thought process or even the topic of what they're saying morphs into something different. So I think, you know, it's about being curious. That's really the number one thing, being mutually curious, respectful, and open to each other's lived experiences. And it really is tossing that judgment aside. And of course, you know, as being a parent, if we hear something from our teen, at last they reveal to us and we're like, you did what? So, right? So that breaks down, right?
Yes.
That erects the barrier again. So yeah.
Well, it also probably depends on how many you ask, because I've learned my oldest daughter is 23, almost 24. So I know more now about when she was 16 than I did when she was. And the distance makes it less scary.
Yeah.
You're open to hearing what things that you might have been upset when they were 16 sharing them. So, all right, so let's do this. Let's dive into some of these cards. So the first one we pulled from 52 Essential Conversations. It was your starting card deck. And so we're going to start there. This card is a prompt about asking for help, right? And the card asks a person to describe a time when that person was too embarrassed to ask for help. And I'm wondering if you can recall a time when that applied to you, when you were too embarrassed to ask for the help that you might have needed or wanted.
Yeah. I think as a new parent, I should have asked for more help than I did. And I think I was bought into this whole motherhood is all about sacrifices. And as a good mother, you need to put your kids number one and your needs aside, because otherwise you're a selfish mom. And so I think I had a period of time where I was really stuck. I felt like, why am I even feeling like I want to take a nap on the couch on a Sunday afternoon or something? But that is bad. That is selfish, right? And so I think instead of asking for help and reaching out to my girlfriends and really even my partner and other people around me, and you know, that's an interesting thing, or the irony in it is that sometimes when we need the most help, we are surrounded by people, yet we feel incredibly isolated, alone, and different, right? And so for me, that was that moment. And I wish I had really vocalized what I was feeling truthfully to the people around me and to seek for some commonalities and advice from others.
Because you would have found it. You would have found that when you gave voice to what you were experiencing and maybe the suffering that you were in, the worry that you had, you would have, by sharing it, learned that other people had that very similar experiences, or even if they didn't, they had support. I hope we're going to have time to get to your TED Talk, because you gave a TED Talk called How to Be Selfish Without Feeling Selfish. And I'd love to get there. And I know in that talk, which I think everyone should find the time to listen to, and I'm going to link to it in our show notes, you talk about this period of your time as a new mom. And I was nodding along with it because I have three children and, you know, experienced postpartum depression after my second, because I, you know, it was overwhelmed with a toddler and a baby not sleeping through the night. And I felt really underwater. And I was too embarrassed to tell people that, which is like, when I think back on it now, it's insane. Like that I didn't ask for help earlier. And, you know, I too did finally get there. I shared with my husband what was going on, and then a doctor, and I got medicine and the support that I needed and was able to move through that period of time. But I could have short-circuited or shortcut the healing process by sharing more openly, like right when I started experiencing that. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I think this is, you know, you and I are both talking about a period of time in our young motherhood, which was years ago, but there are always things that are going on, you know, health challenges, job loss, struggles in relationships. And I would encourage anyone who is experiencing that right now to consider sharing it with somebody, because you may be surprised to get the support you need and to feel seen. So thank you, Jenny, for that.
Yeah. And I just want to add, Katie, really fast. I think what's really relevant to sort of our stage of life, right, that in terms of asking for help, is that many of the listening to this, you might have done really, really well, whether it's career or on the household side. But when we are then confronted with different milestones like empty nesting or needing to switch careers or maybe retirement, that is also incredibly disorienting. And having worked so hard to be successful and externally successful, I think that is also a junction where it's really hard for us to be vulnerable and ask for help. So that's also something to think about.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. So this is actually a great segue into the next prompt I wanted to ask you about. It's your deck, 52 Essential Coping Skills. And you offer hands-on exercises that guide you in sort of self-reflection and reflection with a partner, whoever you're sharing the cards with, and journaling. Many of these cards can help users reset expectations and mindsets and attitudes really towards all aspects of life. So one of your cards is called Name It to Tame It. And I love this because I've actually learned from guests on the show who work in mental health that sometimes naming what you're experiencing is really such a powerful and underrated step for tackling that. So here's the prompt. Quote, we can see a difficult situation as either a challenge and feel daringly excited or a threat and feel utterly helpless. Name your sources of threat. Instead of running away, how can you approach it as a challenge? How would you answer this, Jenny?
Yeah. How we frame things is so incredibly important. And personally for me, I really saw the fact that I took this huge, I guess, off-ramping or career break as a source of threat. And I think this, many of the listeners may share this sentiment. And that when we have to take a career break, being the sandwich generation, whether it's caring for elders or for our kids, we are wondering and doubting if we'll ever get back to the identities that we once were. And so for me, I was fresh out of my MBA program. I was on a 3-year leadership rotational program. It was a very prestigious position, but I off-ramped around the first year and shortly, after my MBA. And so I could be sitting there lamenting, feeling resentful, right? Or I can try to see it as a source of challenge. Like now I get to take on challenge of being a caregiver. Can I make lemonades out of lemon? Can I make the most of out of this experience, this precious time? And I think it's important for us to see a situation or a choice that we have done rather instead of as a sacrifice, perhaps as a privilege. Hmm. And yeah, so, and I say that partially because when I remember coming over to the United States and reuniting with my mother, and for the next few years, one of the biggest sentiment I heard from my mother was how she sacrificed her job, her career, her wants, and moved over to the United States. Now she doesn't know the language. She doesn't have a job. She doesn't this, doesn't that. And she could have done this and all that stuff. And so for me as a child to hear that type of language, in some sense, I felt blamed. I felt guilty. And so that is also something that we really have to think about in terms of the language, how our language impacts how we see ourselves and how others see us and interpret the situation. And so I would say when something like that happens, instead of seeing things as a threat, how can you really not underestimate your choices, but rather find the strength and the things and the sense of agency that you might get from doing something.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds like such a powerful realization, being presented with things that your mom is sharing with you that you decided to reframe for yourself in a different way. We all know this. The only thing, life is full of things that are out of our control. And one of the only things that you can control is how you react to the things that you're presented with. And so sometimes, I think getting to midlife has given me more tools in my toolkit for reacting to things in in a way that make me feel positive and proud of how I'm behaving. I'm going to say that's not always the case. And there are still times when I'm like, oh my God, I'm 54. How have I not figured this out yet? Like, why am I shrieking at people in my own home? So it's a continual work in progress. We are going to be nearing the end of our time together. We have one last prompt that I want to ask you before we get into our speed round, but I do want to just take a minute to ask you a question that I ask many, many people on this show. Could you have done this? Could you have launched these cards? Could you have had the kind of wisdom yourself to recognize that these skills are so needed across generations and across ages when you were younger? Or did it take getting to midlife, going through all of your serial reinventions, going through your challenges, feeling the turbulence that you went through as a new mom? And could you have done what you're doing now when you were younger? Did it take getting to midlife to do this?
Yeah, great question. I think it really takes the sort of this time of seasoning, marinating, and distilling in order to get to really what I've created. I don't think I could have done that in my 20s or 30s. And really, everything I've developed as these 11 card decks are really originated from my own struggles and pain points. And I think that is also sort of, instead of seeing something as a thread, right? How can you do something about it and make it so that not only you benefit, but everybody else around you? So yeah, Katie, I think aging is a good thing in this sense.
Yes, absolutely. I love it. Okay, so before we head into our speed round, my last question for you comes from your deck, 52 Essential Gratitude Attitude Prompts. So this deck has gratitude prompts as well as an affirmation on each of the cards and a quote that's so beautiful. Allows you to dive a little bit deeper into each concept. So the card that we came up with reads, quote, "As a reminder, we are all works in progress, that we are all perfectly imperfect, and that what makes us human." I love this. I think you just alluded to it when you talked about the evolution and the seasoning and the marinating that happens. What does it mean to you to be a work in progress? And where do you see yourself sort of going next? Do you have any clarity, or are you just waiting and seeing?
I think work in progress is what makes us human. And to be honest, it's what makes life worth living. And it's what makes it fun and interesting. You don't want to have literally your book on you already written, this clear path, right? So in terms of having a clarity of what's happening next, honestly, I don't. And I'm okay with that. And that is what's fun, because I think I love the sense of flow, just finding something, your creativity, your interest and curiosity and tinkering, playing, trying to understand it. And so I also like this flow of life, just things come up, good or bad, and what do you do about it? So I have some general mission, what I really want to do to leave a legacy, but I can guarantee you that the cards aren't going to be the last things that I will leave. So
I am 100% sure. First of all, I mean, I just love this notion. Like, you don't have to be the same woman you were yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. We can continuously be writing new stories. And this notion of flow that you just talked about, I mean, it's so clear to me from our conversations, from spending time with your material, watching your TED Talk, that you are so open to new experiences. You were open to me dropping into your inbox. Like, the moment I finished reading that article, I was like, let me find this woman's email. I'm going to email her. And I think I hit you up over email and on LinkedIn. And you're obviously somebody who says yes to many things in your life. And I'm really grateful you said yes to this conversation. I appreciate it.
Well, first of all, just so that you know, don't say yes to everything. And I certainly do not say yes to everything. So, but having landed on your podcast and hearing your episodes, I mean, you're providing an amazing resource. I just absolutely fell in love with it. And so I said, hey, I got to talk to Katie.
I know. I think we're connected because we love to have conversations, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. You know, this is like how we learn new things and how we process what's going on in our lives. You know, I have learned so much from recording this podcast. I've learned how to help myself with challenges that I'm experiencing in midlife. I love sharing this information with others. And I get lit up every single Monday when I get to have these conversations and bring them out into the world. So thank you. All right, we are moving into our speed round because our time is coming to an end. So I'm curious. This is just 1 to 2 word answers. Just share whatever comes to top of mind when you hear this. Fill in the blank of this thought. Launching a startup is?
Thrilling.
Thrilling? I love it. Okay. First time you saw your card decks for sale on Amazon, you felt?
So many emotions. Rewarding.
Nice. What's a card prompt that you return to again and again with your own kids?
Identity.
Okay. What is one of the 52 cards in your essential gratitude attitude deck that makes you feel grounded?
Ooh, there are so many, but one of it is, what is something that you can do now that people cannot 50 years ago?
Ooh, I love that. Well, first of all, the answer is we can record a podcast on Riverside. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
Right? I mean, the world is full of miraculous things. All right. Even emotional intelligence experts need to work hard to navigate negative emotions. What is a lifestyle choice or a hack or decision that makes you feel at peace in your own life?
I think having your own boundaries, the non-negotiables, be clear with that.
Nice. That's great advice. Okay. Entrepreneurship is a roller coaster. Is there an app, a hack, or a tool that helps you keep the trains on the tracks?
Uber Eats.
Oh, Uber Eats. Oh my gosh. I love it. All right. This one might be hard. So you can use more than one little phrase here. You've already done a TED Talk. If you were to do a second, what topic would you cover?
Ooh, how fun.
You're probably thinking, don't make me do another TED Talk.
No. I have done a second one. It's a TED Salon. Oh. And it was on emotional intelligence. Oh, this one's hard. Emotional resilience?
Emotional resilience. I love it. Okay. By the way, I need to go. I did not do my homework as thoroughly as I thought. I got to go find that second talk, but I'm going to find it and pop both into the show notes. Okay. Finally, your one word answer to complete this sentence. As I age, I feel?
Grounded.
I love it. Jenny, this has been so much fun. Thank you for, I know you don't say yes to everything you just tell me, but thank you for saying yes to this. Before we say goodbye, how can our listeners keep following you, your work, and get access to your decks, your card decks?
Sure. I have tons of free resources as well as the card decks on my website, which is mindbrainemotion.com. And it's also available on Amazon. And you can find me on Instagram or Facebook at mindbrainparenting.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you for having me, Katie.
It was fun.
Yes.
Beauties, do not go anywhere because it's time for listener questions. This question came in from Thonmeat S. Thonmeat asks, Katie, what is the biggest thing you've taken away from your guests? What is the number one thing that you learn and think about? Love this question. I learn something on every single show. I hear so much wisdom, so many smart tips, tools, and strategies that I truly include in my everyday life. I think of Dr. Melina Giampolis every time I make avocado toast and I sprinkle spices on it. I think of her when I'm adding shakes of pumpkin spice and cinnamon to my oatmeal. I think of Dr. Vonda Wright twice a day when I brush my teeth in the morning and at night, because she has reminded me that standing on one leg doing that helps you improve your balance as you age. So much smart advice. But if I were to think of the biggest takeaway that really informs how I get up and get going and how I tackle new ideas and a piece of wisdom that I really want to share with all of you listeners, it's this. You do not need to know how the story is going to end to get started writing it, right? You do not need to know the end result of whatever action you're taking in order to get started. And this is really a theme of the show. I've heard this from Angel Cornelius, who is the creator and founder of the beauty brand Maison 276. Angel started mixing potions in her kitchen because she needed them herself. She did not know her story would end with her selling them online at QVC, right? So she just got in action and she followed her journey until it took her someplace really amazing. I think of Donna Klassen, who was one of the co-founders of the nonprofit Let's Talk Menopause. Donna realized that there was not enough information about menopause. She realized that there needed to be a sort of a collective voice to educate, empower, and advocate on behalf of menopausal women. She started that nonprofit 3 years ago. She did not know it would take her to the steps of the Capitol, watching the Menopause Equity Research Act being introduced. So again, she started one place, 3 years later, took her someplace very different. I think of Meryl Brown, who was one of my early guests. Meryl launched a party planning company. When she threw that first party, she did not know 15 years later, she'd have a multi-million dollar company. But you don't have to really knock it out of the park and make gigantic strides to get started. Your journey could look like, I'm going to the gym or working with a trainer or picking up weights or taking that knitting class or volunteering in my synagogue. You know, there's a lot of different ways to put yourself in action and then just follow along, keep going, follow the fun, follow the breadcrumbs that take you someplace entirely new. So that is the biggest takeaway. I hear it over and over again. I've lived it myself. When I launched this podcast 170 shows ago, I didn't realize I'd still be here and that I'd be talking to women all over the globe. So get started, beauties. That is my advice. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today. Before I say goodbye, a quick favor. This was such a fab show. Please forward it on to anyone in your life looking for new tools to build resilience, to deepen relationships, and learn new strategies for feeling happy, calm, and connected. Dr. Jenny Wu drops so much wisdom. And a quick reminder that we would love your 5-star podcast review. If you learned something on today's show, if you've got some easy ideas that you're going to start using immediately, please take 5 minutes to write a short review over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This wraps A Certain Age, a show for women who are aging without apology. Special thanks to Michael Mancini, who composed and produced our theme music. See you next time. And until then, age boldly, beauties.